So for those of you wondering what exactly is going to be the intro for this week, we're doing something a little bit differently, and I think you guys are going to enjoy it.
Welcome to the Basically Brothers podcast. With us, as always, is he is the proud owner of a valid handicap parking pass, which is displayed in a 98 Toyota Corolla. He is also able to skip to the front of the line at Six Flags Hutton Yurt, and his co-host, the definition of a Twitter beef, and gets into online chat room fights with people who think that the Star Wars prequels were lame, Mike McBride. Anyway, take a seat, take off your shoes. Crack open some club soda and relax because you're listening to us now, man. We hope you guys enjoy this week's podcast.
Guys, welcome to the podcast. We're back. It's episode two.
Welcome, welcome. Let me just send this text real quick, my best friend.
Of course, absolutely.
Go for it.
Guys, while Hutton's sending this text, it's important, guys. You gotta keep tabs on your people, especially during these trying times out here. You know what I'm saying? So he's honestly doing the Lord's work right now. We are so thankful that you guys are listening to episode two. Episode one was, after a while, you know, me and Hutton kind of discussed it. It was a little lame and a little dry, I don't know. I feel like it wasn't honestly that natural for us either.
Yeah.
It
wasn't a topic that either of us were super, super into.
Yeah. Not really that knowledgeable. I think it was just something that, like, you know, it was there and I was like, all right, the first one, we might as well, who knows. But I want to jump right into it actually this week.
Do you have a carbonated beverage with you?
I do not have a carbonated beverage. I do, however, have a beverage of choice.
Okay, I'll just open my carbonated beverage on my own. But if you had a carbonated beverage, then we would have opened it together, obviously.
Yeah, obviously. Guys, take off your shoes, you know, sit back, relax, crack open a carbonated beverage of your choice, honestly.
Good.
And enjoy. Listen to us for a little bit. Let us take an hour, hour and a half out of your day and just enjoy what we have to say. Hutton.
Yes.
You're a food guy.
Right? I am indeed quite the food guy.
Would you consider yourself a food connoisseur?
I guess in a sense I would, but I wouldn't call myself someone who seeks out amazing food. I just eat a lot of food.
It's the quantity, not the quality, right?
I have a lazy, can you see this? Is this eye open less than this eye?
Are you having a stroke?
I don't know. Wow, this is. I guess if this episode doesn't post, then no one will know that I had a stroke because they won't see it.
But. We'll still post it. I'm not gonna lie. We're still gonna post it, but yeah, it could be allergies. So
it could be. It could definitely be that.
Could be them allergies.
We're just posting audio for this, not video, so it's okay.
Yeah, it's okay. We're just posting the audio even on YouTube. So. Some good stuff. It's a lot stronger than I remember. The reason why I ask, Hutton, do you feel like you would try different foods? Like anything
I would never tried before? Would I what?
Like, would you try anything you haven't tried before?
I mean, sure. I'd try all kinds of food. I'm sure there's a lot of food I haven't tried, but I'd be willing to.
The reason why I bring this up is because I have here top 10 most bizarre foods in the world, okay? Uh-huh. And I want to go through them with you, and I want to know, would you eat it, or would you just, like, offend the culture that you are currently indulging? Yeah. Currently indulging and say, you know what? I'm not going to try your delicacy. Ew. Get that away from me.
Well, you know, now that I think about it, I've heard of some people who've gone on mission trips and it's been absolutely wild.
Yeah, absolutely. But I don't think it's been this wild. I'm just looking at some of these and I'm like, okay, this is a lot. So I'll read the description for you real quick. This is called, Hakari. It's native to Iceland. All right.
I see.
So It's saying that this is made from Greenland shark and is most poisonous when fresh. So in order to eat it, Icelanders let it spoil in the ground for months and then out in the elements for a few more to dry. And it's essentially fermented shark meat. Okay. While the smell of the putrefied shark itself could make the faint-hearted ill, it tastes ultimately sweet, nutty, and faintly fishy.
Okay.
Like ammoniated wax.
That sounds terrible.
So fermented shark hide kind of looks like beef jerky a little bit here.
I mean, I believe that.
Yeah, it definitely looks like, I don't know what you would call that. Kind of looks like those big old jerkies.
Uh-huh.
So is that a I'd eat it or I'd dishonor
the family? I mean, of course, you don't have to eat like all of it. If you're going to eat it and throw up, like you can't eat more of it, you know?
So this is more of a, I'm going to put this on a toothpick and try it and then
yeah,
be like,
sure, I'd try a bite of it. I'd try a bite of it.
You wouldn't want a big old slab like a...
Probably not like I'm taking my jack slings, just ripping that bad boy off.
Tearing it to pieces like a sixth grade shirt that you used to wear. Like
that's right.
Did you ever have gym clothes, speaking of, like when you were in middle school?
You know, we always had, like in our gym classes in like middle school, I don't know if I really took a ton of gym in high school, but in middle school, I know that they had a dress code of course sneakers and then a pair of blue athletic shorts and a white t-shirt.
They gave you guys sneakers?
No, they never gave us any of that. We had to buy it ourselves.
I see.
Well, but like we'd have to wear it, but at the end of the, I mean, you know, halfway through everyone's out of white shirts and blue shorts, so you really just wear any athletic clothes you can, and then there's those kids who just wear jeans anyways.
Yeah. So this sort of reminds me of, I don't think I would eat it like just at all. Cause I remember looking at this and being like, oh, okay, it's fermented. That kind of sounds cool. And then I realized that they buried it underground for months and then in the elements to dry.
Well, it's gotta be like it. I mean, I guess I don't know that it has to be safe, but like if they eat it regularly and it doesn't kill them all, like everyone who eats it doesn't die. It's got to be kind of safe, at least.
I'm not even talking from like a safe point of view. I'm talking from like a taste point of view. It just doesn't look good to me. And I'm an adventurous soul, man.
I'd try a bite of it.
Okay.
Especially if I was blindfolded, I'd definitely try a bite of it. If I had never seen it and they just gave me a fork, sure.
Okay. So that is it's a bite for Hutt and a nope from me. So today's topic, it's a bit of a strange one, not gonna lie. We're gonna be talking about our work experiences, but not like, oh yeah, we worked somewhere, it was good and I had a good time. No. We're talking about the crazy times. All right.
The crazy work experiences.
We're talking about the craziness of our jobs. Everybody has them to some extent. Yeah. Everybody has a quote unquote crazy work experience. But
yeah.
Hutton and I, in our extensive years of being on this earth, we've worked a lot of places. We've seen a lot of faces, and you know, we've had some crazy work experiences.
Well, which one do you want to talk? Do you want to talk about like customer service, or do you want to talk about like food service stuff?
Well, I think to start off, because most of my crazy ones happened in like customer service or just like a service industry. So I think we should start there. And then if people want, because I got at least one or two crazy food service ones. If people want a second episode of Crazy Work Stories, we can go on there too. Let's go for 5 likes and then we'll do a second.
Yeah. Maybe a comment would let us know.
Leave us a review.
Just one person who watches this. Just let us know.
One comment. Just let us know. So, Hutton, where have you worked and what was your craziest work experience?
So I've worked a few places. My first job was obviously at the church. This is just my work background at the church. I worked in the nursery. Then I started working just all around with the kids there. And then I started interning at the church. But I worked for the city in which we live. I worked there as a assistant t-ball coach, which, yes, I got paid for, which was money.
Literally and metaphorically.
Yeah. And let's see, I worked at Sushi One, which is a awesome food place in the city where we live. I love the sushi there, and the owner actually played tennis, so that was cool. And then after Sushi One, I left Sushi One to work at Workout West at their tennis center. I'd never work at their gym because they're just different there. I loved all my tennis people, but they closed that place down. And then I worked at, let me think, after the tennis center, I worked at a place called the Frequency Healing Center, which was a gym for, was basically a gym for old people. And what they have machines that move your legs for you. So you just lay down on this bad boy and it just moves your legs for you, basically, like it's doing the workout for you. And then I had to quit that. And I'm trying to remember. That was when I didn't really have a job. And so I worked at Chick-fil-A for one day with my best friend.
He was unemployed. And I said, you know what? I'll take you under my wing. I was the kitchen manager at the time. And I was like, yeah, I vouched for him. He got through the process. Didn't really even need an interview or anything.
No, I didn't. They said, well, Mike recommended you, so we trust you enough. So here you go. You got the job. And then after the first day, I brought my clothes in and my name badge and I quit. He
looked at me halfway through the night and goes, this ain't for me, dog. I'm out.
Yeah.
I
think we kind of both expected that, but that's okay.
I was hoping not.
You know? I mean, it would have been fun, but you truly are. I mean, I have quite the knack for finding jobs that are literally the least amount of work I could ever have. Whereas you are like a workhorse. Like you literally, you work until you just, I mean, you do. Sometimes I think you work to prove people wrong. Like
sometimes I work till the wheels fall.
I think you work to like make people angry. Cause like if you have a boss that doesn't like you, but you like work so hard that they can't like justify not liking you.
Yeah.
But I find the easiest jobs I can, and I ride those for as long. The Workout West Tennis Center, pretty easy job. Now, I'm currently working at a big electronics chain that you guys
really? Could probably
guess. It starts with a B.
It's got blue and yellow in its logo.
Yeah,
It definitely is. It's the best for your budget when you want to get electronics, you know? It's definitely
If you want to get a really good buy. It's
the best for
you that it might be the best place to buy things. But there, I'm working there now as asset protection or as a security guy, basically. So if you come in, don't try to do anything. I swear I will drop the shoulder and break your arm through a door.
That's a threat though, guys. So if you really wanted to, you could probably get away with it.
Don't do it, because I swear I have full rights to throw you through a door. I'm just kidding, I don't. But don't do it, because I do have some rights to stop you.
Maybe not throw, but like maybe trip, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Accidental.
Oh, we can get him now.
That's right. And I forgot. I work at a local country club on the golf course as a bag boy, which is pretty nice.
So explain it to somebody who is not upper class, but not like I'm not poor, right? But I'm not like so much to the point where I can afford like a country club membership.
Well, like, I've never been there either.
what are like the requirements to be a country club member? I've always wondered this. And like what?
You have to have a lot of money. That's it.
Jeez, that's it.
If you can pay the fees to get in, then you can get in.
And then, like, what is it, like an annual fee or something like that?
Yeah, I think that they charge a monthly fee, actually.
Yeah, and probably because people
obviously pay for the stuff you do, like at the club. So like people pay for like golf lessons and stuff. I work with the golf community, the golf people there. They're really nice. Well, some of them are nice.
The golf realm.
Most of them give pretty decent tips, which is great for us because we need them. And I think that's most of my jobs. I'm trying to remember if I forgot any.
Is it a very diverse culture in country clubs?
I don't know. You do get people from a lot of different thought realms.
Mm.
You hear a lot of different ideas about how things should be done.
Definitely. Just with like the world in general, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. But I'm trying to remember if I've worked anywhere else. I worked for the church. I sound like I am a big church boy, which is true. But I...
Big old church boy. Literally and metaphorically.
I worked in the nursery. I'm currently a youth intern at the church. And I also opened and closed the church for some time. So on Sundays, I would be the person who got there first and unlocked the doors. And I'd be the last person who left and locked the doors.
All right, not saying that you're important or anything.
Well, over there,
silence my phone.
I'm trying to think if I had any other jobs. I don't know.
I don't think you did.
I don't think I did either. But, yeah, I mean, I have some good stories from most of those places.
Very
some
nice.
Some funny stories that probably I shouldn't have experienced at those ages, but that's all right.
You were exposed very young, and it's okay.
There were some interesting characters that I worked with, to say the least.
So in my experience, I consider myself somewhat of a job journeyman. I have worked anywhere between food service. I worked mostly food service in my life, but I have had some pretty odd jobs here and there. I've worked in Starbucks, some local coffee shops as well. I have been a cook at a pizza place, and then pizza / Italian. So I did more than just pizza. I also was a camp counselor at a camp for kids with special needs. I won't be giving out the name because I still have people who work there and have respect for.
You want to keep it a little more privat?
Yeah, because there is definitely one story where, and I don't think you've ever heard this story, but there is definitely one that's, it's not, if it wasn't on private property, it would be illegal. So.
Oh gosh. I don't know what falls under that, but I don't know. I want to know.
So I only worked there for a summer, just to kind of give you guys a little baseline for it. And in that summer, there was two times that I could have been arrested. One of which was assault would have been the charge.
Yeah.
Assault of a minor.
like punching someone.
Like punching somebody. And then the other one would have been classified as, it's different, but it's like weird.
You gotta say it, Mike. People probably indecent. Think you're like some weird little like pedo or something.
No, it was indecent exposure, but it was not around any of the campers. It wasn't around any, it was just the
Mike just had to take a leak in a lake.
It is the entire men's staff, and we did something that was we got reprimanded for. And then I've worked at a hospital. Not a normal hospital. It was a hospital for those who suffer from mental illnesses. It was a mental hospital. It was a loony bin. And there was a lot that went down there. Nothing that I had, but they were suffering from insurance fraud. So
that's exciting.
Yep. And they also put us in dangerous situations, I want to say, at least for me anyway. But I think they were more of the lines of, well, he can handle it, so he's okay.
Yeah, you're a big guy. You can handle it.
So I am a bigger guy, and I think that's kind of where I want to start off is, you know, because of that, I look strong. I am strong, but like I look strong. All these kinds of things. And there was one day we had a gentleman, and keep in mind, like, these are crazy stories. It's kind of to just kind of make a light of this situation. And it's almost therapeutic for me, for those of you who are listening, just to kind of get it out there. And I'm not trying to.
Yeah. Mike is a very caring person.
I don't want to
light of these, like, they can be seen in a funny light, and we want to show them in a funny light because that's how we enjoy looking at things, in a funny light.
But in no way is this trying to like make fun of those people, because there are people who are, you know, just dealing with mental illness. And then, you know, when it comes to the camp with special needs, those guys have physical disabilities that aren't curable, and they're living with it. So, but to start off, I want to start off with a story from the mental health hospital. There was a gentleman I shouldn't say that. There was a person who, we'll cut that out for sure. There was a person who you could kind of say that they were a regular. As far as like they were in and out of the system, and they would just keep coming back because of just their overall needs weren't being met, and they kept finding them at the hospital. And there would be times where their attitude would change because of a word that might have been triggering or anything like that.
Yeah.
And I told this person, they were like, you know, will I see you next week? And I was like, I hope not, because you shouldn't be here next week. Oh. But if you are here next week, then yeah, absolutely, I'll see you here. Like, that's fine. And then that week I was actually on the adolescent unit. So the way that they have it broken down at the mental hospital is, I believe seven like units.
Yeah. So
the first two are adult, or the first two are geriatric, which are like your older patients and more senile patients. Yeah. The 3 through 4 is like more of the acute adults, who are classified as the most dangerous people you will ever meet. And that was where I usually was. And then the next one was the adolescent unit. All of them were divided so that nobody could have contact with each other, especially the adults with the kids. And that's something
that's obviously just for safety. That's not like,
that's a safety thing that has nothing to do with, like,
that's clearly a safety
thing. But I was on the adolescent unit because we were dealing with a patient who, was classified as, a lot more dangerous than, any of the other techs, is what they called us, could handle. And that's why I was there. So I was there, and I ran into them on my break, this person who was going through this, and he was just like, "Traitor, I'll get you back," and these kinds of things.
Stop saying he. We're going to have to cut some of that out.
Well, I saw them again, and they were just like, "Oh, you traitor, I can't believe that you would do this to me. Like, I'll get my revenge." I didn't really think of it as anything. I was just like, okay, they are in a mood, and, you know, they just want to cause problems, and that's okay. Another side note to this story is actually, I was on a special group of individuals called the Code Purple team. So the way that hospitals work, if you've ever watched a like hospital show, they'll say like Code Blue, or they'll say like Code Orange, or something like that. Like, anything.
Mike frequents all of the hospital shows.
I do.
Brooklyn are fanatics.
I am a house connoisseur right now, and if you guys are of age to which House actually intrigues you, I would recommend watching the show. It is brilliantly made.
I don't think I've ever seen an episode of House.
You have to. It's brilliant. I think you would especially love it. I love shows like that, and it's a show called White Collar.
Okay.
It has to do with like this art thief and art forgerist. But anyway, the codes indicate sort of like what's going down in a certain unit. So if you said code purple, it means that somebody's acting hostile. They're throwing punches. They need to be taken down. And in a very appropriate way, of course, the takedowns that we used were very non-harming to the patients, but also kept us safe.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that all of this has been thought and like regulated to a point where like there's a reason they are able to take them down safe, you know, like,
right. Absolutely.
People are like, what if it's not like that great for the patient? But it's like, I'm sure that it's all been thought about so meticulously that you're able to say like, oh, it's like the least harming way by keeping us safe, you know?
And the thing is about calling codes, we want it to be the last resort. And unfortunately, during this day, I was working in adolescence. The kids were like watching a movie. I don't remember what it was, but I had a radio on me and the radio was like, hey, Mike, can you come down to the 400 or 500 block? Because they were kind of interseated by like a door. And I was like, yeah, okay, that's fine. We had another patient who I thought was the cause of this issue. And that'll be one of my stories probably when we end. they were a big threat. And I was like, okay, yeah, I'll come down there and make sure, sort of talk them down. And this particular person who they were kind of in this situation with took a liking to me particularly, and then hated my guts because of me saying, yeah, I'll probably see you later, and then not seeing them. So little on edge. And so I was walking towards the 400 unit because that's where most of our patients were. And they were like, actually, we want you to enter in through the 500. And I was like, okay, yeah, for sure. I can do that. And then I did. The patient's back was turned towards me. Okay. And there were three of them kind of just surrounding this person. And
three other techs.
Three other techs surrounding him.
Them. My geez.
It's fine.
We're going to have to like blur. Going to have to like bleep that out. And it's going to sound like we're saying bad words when really Mike's just disclosing the gender of this person.
Yeah. It's fine. But we had three techs surrounding them, and they turn around and just yell out, you, and rushes me all alone. And it's a pretty big like entrance door. And I was like, what's going on? And then we finally, like, we call a code. We get them to just be, you know, sort of okay, calm, that kind of thing.
Calmer.
Put them in a room by themselves to sort of just calm down. And, this is the funniest thing about techs is sometimes there are certain people who want a code to be called, which is not technically what you were supposed to do. But if the patient is not moving, if they refuse to do anything or anyone, and they're just wasting time, and when you are supposed to be focusing on others and it's affecting other people's safety because of it.
Yeah.
There is something that you need to do. And I just happened to be the tipping point. And, you know, after the dust had settled, I look at the other three techs and I went, you called me in here just so that this person would swing, huh? And they go, yep, absolutely. And I was like, that's dirty. That's so dirty.
That's dirty.
And I was like, it works. They're calmed down now. And, you know, we got them to do what we wanted to.
But it's arguably a safer situation because you were able to de-escalate it without having to resort to any sort of physicality at all.
Yeah. So, but he did swing, and we actually did have to put this person in a hold, and that hold lasted very long. Like, I think I was there for at least 45 minutes just holding them down so that the effects of the sedative that we gave them would take place.
Yeah.
Well, that is one of my crazy stories, starting off with a good one.
That's I mean, you might have pulled out one of the craziest I've heard you tell me, at least.
That's a good one. Yeah, that's for sure.
I have a pretty interesting one.
Go for it.
So at the tennis center that I worked at, and I'm not really worried about naming names for that, because, well, I won't name the person's name, but I'm not worried about, like, the tennis center. It's closed down now. There was a guy that everyone knew, and he was pretty notorious for being out there, and he would say some vulgar things about some of the female players. And he was just kind of an aggressive dude all around. He wasn't very tall. He probably didn't come up to my pec, but
he was compensating.
He was a pretty, I don't know, feisty. He was a feisty dude.
He drive a big truck too.
And no, he definitely didn't drive a big truck. Maybe he did. No, I think he had a normal car. But everyone knew, and he had actually been kicked out of the club once before for, like, kind of going, like, bananas. How you get down, so when you come into this tennis center I worked at, you go past the front desk, and then you turn left, and you have to go downstairs, and then turn right, and that's where the tennis courts were. And so he came back up from the tennis courts, and he was a coach. And he was, like, he knew tennis. He was pretty decent at teaching tennis. But he was just kind of cuckoo. And he came back up because there was someone down on the court that he didn't like coaching. And he just wasn't there. He just wasn't cool. He came up and he was just getting crazy and kind of yelling and stuff. And so they kicked him out of the club for a while. And they revoked his membership. And then he obviously got his membership back because he kept playing there. And that was a long time before I worked there. That might have been maybe when I played there. I don't know. I don't remember when they told me that story was. But I remember a little while before, like, my story really starts, we had gotten pepper spray at our front desk, and we had gotten a miniature baseball bat at our front desk, like one of those, like, little steel baseball bats, like a tiny, like a super tiny one, like probably like the size of like my forearm. And they said that we got it because there was a member who kept coming back. Like, they had their membership revoked, but they just kept coming and, like, harassing people. And it wasn't this guy. It wasn't him, but we had just gotten that. And I remember, like, that was a detail that I remember. And so this dude, the cuckoo guy, kind of comes in, and he had been a coach for a local team that I had managed when I was in high school. So I managed this girls team when I was in high school, and then after I graduated, he started assistant coaching that team. And I knew the kind of person he was, you know, like, you really want him around high school girls kind of guy, like like a little uncomfy, like, he never did anything obviously, but you're just like, let's watch. Yeah, you're like, let's just watch that guy a little closer than most of the other coaches.
Make sure he has an assistant, please.
Yeah, and after he had come in and he said, yeah, I got a bonus check for sending someone to state, sending one of the girls to state tennis. And I was like, that's great. And he said, yeah, and then they fired me. And I was like, oh, why'd they do that? And he was like, yeah, someone had reported that I had problems with, like, some parents and some other coaches from other teams. And I was like, oh, great. Like, I was like, well, not great. I didn't say, oh, great. I said, oh, that stinks. And then, like, we just kind of stopped talking, and he went and sat down somewhere probably like 10 feet away. And I sat back down at the desk, and I was just watching Netflix or something. And he just all of a sudden, and I'm only saying what he said, like, kind of word for word, because I want you to know how genuinely like quick and scared I was, like how quick I had to be and how scared I was at this point. He looked over from sitting down, and I'm kind of tall, so even though I was sitting, I could see like over a high part of our desk.
Yeah.
He looked at me and he said, "I'm going to beat your F word effing A word booty butt. I'm going to beat your effing cheeks. Butt.
He's going to beat the cheeks, bro."
Yeah. And so I was like, I literally like just turned and I looked at him, and he like stood up like right after he said that, he stood up. And so I stood up and I was like, "What?" And he was walking like towards the desk that I was standing behind. Thankfully, I feel like I would have pooped my pants if there wasn't a desk in between us. And he said, "Don't give me that F word effing look." And I was like, "What?" And ooh. Then like, all it was like he was in a trance. Like all of a sudden he like snapped out of it. He was just like, "Oh, ha, just kidding." Like, you know how people are like, I think it's like he realized that he shouldn't have said that.
That is scary.
And so, like, yeah. I mean, that's one of my crazier ones. And I'm like, I'm about to have to beat this dude up. I'm about to have to, like...
Your hand was, like, slightly grasping the pepper spray that was underneath.
And that's,
like,
come on. That's exactly... I mean, I kid you not. That's exactly what was... I'm like, I was ready to have to beat this guy up. Because I'm like, I'm not going... I'm like, I'm not going to get hurt for this guy.
Right.
I'm not, like... I don't want to beat him up, but if he starts going for it, I have to defend myself.
That's so crazy, dude. Yeah.
Yeah. That was one of my crazier stories. And that, yeah. And I mean, he ended up kind of, so when the tennis center closed, he ended up kind of going out on bad terms.
Really?
Yeah. He said a lot of rude things about like my boss, who was like, I mean, she was like the greatest boss I've ever, ever had. Hands down, I don't think I'll ever have a boss greater than her. And he said just like some rude things about her and another one of the coaches there. And I'm like, "Bro, you're crazy. Like, just get out of here."
You know what the worst part is? It's about a game. It's about tennis.
That wasn't like about tennis. Like,
no, but like the thing is that people like, it's weird because like that person's livelihood is about like a game. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think about that a lot. I kind of think about like, especially when I used to work there, I'm not as surrounded by tennis as I used to be, right. But like when I would work there, I'd think a lot about how like, this is what these dudes, I'm like, how could these guys get so angry about like playing tennis? And I'm like, this is all they have. I'm like, they go to work and they look forward to coming and playing tennis, and then they go home and go to work, and then they look forward to playing tennis. Like, I kind of understand how they can be a little upset when it, like, affects, like, a part of their life that they spend a lot of time on.
Yeah, absolutely. But, like, then you have to wonder, like, how bad was your childhood to the point where it's, like, you were probably playing this since you were, like, 3. You had a shot to get, like, go pro. You don't think?
People who play tennis when they're 3 end up at least playing like in college.
Yeah.
Like a lot of these guys probably started in middle school or high school.
Okay.
Like honestly, like people in college, sure, they could have started maybe like maybe 6th grade, but I would expect most people in college, if it's like a D1, like they'd been playing since they were 5 or 6 or even 4, you know.
It's definitely weird because like you see golf and you see tennis as like these sports where it's like you have to begin at a very young age. Otherwise, you're not going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
Whereas well, like,
I feel like that's almost any sport.
I mean, with basketball and football, like, I mean, and granted, it's a little different for me because of just my build, my height, and just my athleticism is that, you know, you were given opportunities to do that, but like you really did have to start. You know, otherwise at like age 4.
So. Yeah. I mean, at least have to develop like a passion to play at that
point. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I started playing tennis. Oh boy, I don't want to misquote here. I feel like I was really young, like 6th grade, but I don't think it was 6th grade. I feel like it might have been 8th grade.
Nerd.
Like, but I didn't really start playing tennis until like junior year of high school. Like if I had really started playing when I started playing, like when I had developed, if I had developed a passion when I really started playing, I probably could have done a lot better. Like in the scheme of like playing for college or even like attempting to do some of those things. But no, if
right.
I had developed that passion, would have been way easier.
Yeah. So this next story, I kind of want to just like preface it with, this was probably like the most exhausting 2 weeks of my life from a physical standpoint. And I have, you know, I, for those of you who don't know, if I haven't talked about it at great lengths, I used to be a Division II collegiate basketball player.
Yeah.
And those workouts are insane. They will break you down as a human being. Like, and question whether or not you actually want to play the sport or not anymore. Like that kind of, just mental toughness that is like put into your brain.
Yeah.
And this was still harder than all of that. There was a patient who, this was at the hospital again. Yeah. There was a patient who was just a huge human being. This person was about 6 foot and probably about 300 pounds. And it was, this person was built. Like,
yeah.
Not, they were more on the heavier side of things, but they weren't like.
Like, how does that compare to you and I? You're 6'5", 6'6".
6'7".
I'm 6'6", or 6'7", somewhere around.
We don't know the ranges, but we do get called out in church about that. They were just like, yeah. "How tall are you?" And it's like, well, Hutton's clearly taller than me, but he decided to say 6'6" when I said 6'6". But yeah. It's cool. It's fine.
I don't try to brag. I'm not that close to 300. So like someone shorter than me and like someone 6 inches shorter than me.
Right. And still a tall individual. But like,
he's taller than average for sure. Like a few inches taller than average.
It's a big, big person.
Yeah. Definitely. Tall, a tall, thick boy.
Tall, drink a watt hair.
Yeah. Like just a little too short to play NFL thick.
Pretty much. And I was on a different unit because this person was technically an adolescent. Mm-hmm. But had... This was during the morning, so the kids were having breakfast, and I was in group therapy with all my patients, and I get a call, or actually, no, wait, sorry, I'm doing this completely wrong. So, like, imagine the hospital sort of as like a pentagon, so they have it kind of in sections. There's like, let's say for people imagining, like, the top half is where like the two sides are, and then the three sides are at the bottom. Top right.
I think we all got a pentagon. Don't worry about that part.
Right. Mike. So imagine a pentagon.
Focus on the story part.
The top right side of the pentagon is kind of like where the recreational side and like the food is. The top left is sort of the administration and the lobby. The bottom left is going to be where the geriatrics are. The bottom. Like the center, the bottom center is going to be where the acute unit is. And then the bottom right is going to be where the adolescents are. Adolescents have like the easiest way to get to the food because like they're small and developing. So, so they were doing that. I think I was just observing and making sure that like the recreational center was good so that when we had our patients come in that we would be fine. And I heard rustling, and I was like rustling coming from the cafeteria, which is directly across from it, across in the hallway. And I wondered what was going on. And then I heard like crashing of glass and all these kinds of things. And I was like, uh-oh, stuff's going down.
Yeah.
So I walked in, and there is this person who I've never seen who is huge and like, if was angry enough and felt like they could take me down, could probably beat me. And then there was the tech who looked very frightened, did not have a walkie-talkie on, and was like, I need you to help me out here. So I did. I took the person down, called Code Purple, had them sedated. They slept for most of the day that day. And then I was a part of a meeting mm-hmm. that was like, because of the safe, by the way, this person cleared out all the other adolescents, like to the point where the other tech was so afraid that this person was going to like strangle or kill one of the other patients.
Yeah. Like it's not like they like called you in there for fun. Like it's, the reason they do that is because it's like genuine fear. Like
I mean, for fun or like
you work in an environment where that stuff is like, it can happen, you know?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So because of that, like we took her down, like took them down and, you know, just, it was a, they didn't like have that much resistance the first time. During these 2 weeks, I think I might have had to call a Code Purple the equivalent of 5 times. And I worked 3 days out of the week. I worked 3 12s right after another, 1, 2, 3. And that's 5 times in the span of 2 weeks. That's one takedown plus whatever else is going on for one individual.
Yeah.
The second time, and the worst one, which is the crazy work story that I had, this individual decided to, we were lining up to go to dinner.
Yeah.
And this one decided to play with the door and was just like, you know what? I just want to be, I'm just going to go home. And I might have said something where I said, good luck, these doors you can't get through. To which they responded, hold my apple juice.
Yeah, they're like Big Betty.
These doors are magnetically sealed, okay? Yeah. But they're wooden doors. So it's going to be bendy and it's going to...
Yeah, it's going to have a little flex to it.
It's got a little bit of a flex to it. But this person was a big individual and I was like, you know, I've heard that maybe like 1,000 pounds of pressure, like if all the patients decided that they just wanted to push on this door...
That it could unseal.
Probably do it.
Yeah.
But like...
Or it would break at least, yeah.
But it would break or something like that. But not like a individual breaking these doors.
Yeah.
So they decided to sway back and forth their back, pushing on the little push, the pusher to kind of get out of it.
Yeah. The push bar to get out, yeah.
Yeah. And they just kept going harder, which made them angrier. And then the door just swung right open.
Oh, man.
So to give you guys a little perspective, the unit that I was on, the most dangerous unit, Unit 400, it is 3, but more likely 2 techs with 18 people that they have to manage.
Okay. So the ratio is 2 to 18 or 1 to 9.
Like 1 to 9 people, really. Yeah. And the ratio is supposed to be like 3 for every 5.
Oh, okay. So definitely not right.
Right. So we're a little outnumbered. And they called what is called a code green, which means that somebody is trying to escape. They're not being hostile, they're not doing anything, but they found a way to escape, and that's what we called. Yeah. I remember somebody radioing code green, and one of the receptionists was like, are you serious? Like, somebody's escaping? And we were like, yep, it's happening right now. And
you're like, that door opened, so we got to figure something out. After we get this, we got to figure something out.
And then after that, like, we had a really kind of calm batch of patients that week, so they were just kind of looking like, okay, well, do we go to dinner now or like what's going on? And I was like, you guys need to stay here. And I looked at my other tech and I was like, well, actually I looked at the batches of nurses who were in there and I was just like, I can't stay here. Everybody else is like not fit to probably take this person down.
You're like, so what's gonna happen, right? You're gonna stay here. Crazy idea. And I'm gonna run after the person who just escaped.
Soft pitch. I'm gonna go out there. You guys make sure that they don't leave.
Yeah. You're like, make sure that this door that just magically opens if you want it to.
Right.
Well, if you push on the door and it opens, you stay here. Texts, make sure no one else does that.
The two texts that I had, they're like college girls who are like paper thin and like could not take down this person. And like, I knew the staff that was in the hospital that day, and I was like, there's nobody out there who could probably do this. Yeah. And so what happens is we hear the patient busts through a second batch of security doors.
Oh, wait, so what you're saying is this door didn't lead to the outside of the facility.
No,
it did not. It just led to like another hallway or something.
Right.
Okay. But
busts through the second batch of doors. And then I had a nurse just say, just go, please go it. Like, go do this. We'll handle this. And I was like, okay. We had a office administrator who was rail thin, taking her at the, like, trying to, like, taking her best effort to try and get this person down on their knees and, like, kind of, like, chop blocked them a little bit. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, okay. And so that's when, like, I walked in and, like, grabbed this patient, like, the way that you're supposed to in the front.
Yeah. You do what you're taught.
Yeah. And oh man, we had people from our corporate offices in Nashville there that week. And
of course, yeah.
Oh, it was so much fun. And I like the guy. I really love this guy. And everybody was just like, I stood there for an hour and a half holding this person.
You just said, I love this guy. You can't be saying
that. Oh, no. I was talking about the corporate guy who came in.
Oh, okay.
So, they sedate the patient, and they kept putting up a fight, like a huge, huge fight. So much so to the point where we had like one of our bigger, stockier guys holding the person by their legs.
Yeah.
And this one was doing leg lifts with them.
Oh my goodness. That is like, boy.
And he was our lead tech at the time and was a big dude. Like he.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah. He knew a lot of MMA too and knew the holds and everything like that.
He knew how to handle himself.
Didn't stop it at all. And I just remember holding them, their head butting me in the sternum. And I'm just like, oh man, like this is rough. And I remember sleeping really well that night, just being like, I'm ready for the weekend. Thank you so much.
You're like, wow, okay. I just got out of hell.
Yeah. I was like, this
you're like, I just got definition. Out of getting paid to be headbutted in the sternum. This is great.
I got paid not as much as you would think, and that's not okay with me. So, you know, it's.
That's one thing I will say. Sorry, Dig.
Yeah, go for it.
Sidetrack us off. That's one thing I will say about Chick-fil-A. I didn't work that much. I worked one day. I don't know how long I worked. It was a crazy amount. That's why I quit, was because I couldn't handle those late nights. But they paid well. That check was nice.
That check is mint, dude. They take care of their people. I enjoy it. It's to the, you know, there are some times where it's like you're down on yourself, you know, and you're just like, oh, I don't know if I can keep up these long work hours, and then Friday hits, I get the check and I'm like, yeah, I could do another 2 weeks.
I think that's kind of the system that they pull you in, you know?
Yeah.
They're like, how long can we space out paying employees? And this isn't just Chick-fil-A. Everyone does like this kind of system, at least that I've worked for. They're like, how long could we wait to pay these people before they like want to quit? And then we give them money and they don't. I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. Chick-fil-A was definitely the best paying job I've ever had. I keep trying to get a translator bonus at the electronics store that I work for.
Translator? The place where you
get it. Yeah, because I could potentially translate Chinese.
Yeah, that's true. But
and
I mean,
you get 25 cents an hour raise if you have a translator. And the nice thing, at least from my experience, I don't mean to generalize, Chinese people learn English before they come to America. I would they take learning foreign languages, especially English, very, they take it very seriously because yeah. English is a pretty nice language. Or like not nice language. It's like, it's one of those like money, a business language, a money language.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, I mean, I would never have to translate, which is really nice. And I'd still get 25 cents an hour raise. Thank you.
That's awesome. I mean, for me, it's like, I don't think we get bonuses, but like the two languages basically spoken at Chick-fil-A is Spanish and English.
Yeah.
And
well, you guys have quite a few Spanish translators there, don't you?
Well, we have at least three or four employees on staff who know, who are bilingual essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, who, which is, who,
yeah.
Yeah. Which is really nice. So, do you have another, whatchamacallit?
Crazy work story?
Yeah, that one.
Let me think. I have like a semi-inappropriate one.
Okay.
So when I worked for the city of Greeley, and I'm really going to try to keep names out of this because this person is a friend of mine, and we like, we, I still know this person, and I, it was weird because I kind of worked with them at Workout West. They like worked there when I worked there. So it was weird to like work. I worked at the city when I was young and then at Workout West when I was a little older and I hadn't seen this person in a while, but oh man. Okay. So we, in the city, it was me and I was like 14. I was a pretty young kid.
Yeah.
And I had two other co-workers who were working with me in the city, and they were like 14 and 15 or something. They were my age. And then I think I was that age. I don't know. I feel like I'm gonna, like, my mom's gonna listen to this and she'll be like, you weren't that age. And I'll be like, okay, I can't change it now.
I don't know.
And then we had two supervisors who at the time were like 17. Like they were, I'm like, you could, I'm like, they were only a little older.
Upon further review, you're just like, okay.
Yeah, like, I'm like, you aren't that. I'm like, you could be a supervisor, I guess, but you're not that much older.
You're like, not a supervisor. Right.
And one day they were like, so I was the male coworker in this group. I was the only male of the young kids, of the 14-year-olds. And then there was a male supervisor, and he was a cool dude.
Yeah.
And there was a female supervisor, and this is the female supervisor that I worked with at Workout West for a small amount of time.
Okay.
And one day so what this job was, I'm sorry, I said that I was a t-ball coach. So they basically hired us to set up fake t-ball fields at this giant park.
Okay. Like
a giant grass, so that all these teams that signed up to play t-ball, you know, like little league t-ball,
yeah,
they could come and practice on these little fields. And so what we would do is we'd set up the fields, and then if the coaches needed help, if they wanted us to help coach throwing or take a few kids and help them do whatever, we would do that.
Okay.
And so one day it was in between practice times. And so there'd usually be like 15 minutes. It'd be like, and like a 30-minute practice and then 15-minute break, 30-minute practice, 15-minute break. And there'd be like four practices a night or something. And this the female supervisor was talking about how she had gone on vacation and had gotten a sunburn, and she was telling like her, oh gosh, she was telling her, the other female 14, like the other like workers that were my age at the time.
Okay.
So the other girls. And it was funny because the guy and I had just had the male supervisor and I had just had a talk about how like we feel like those girls are like a little unprofessional, and how they like, and what do we know? Because we're like 14 and 17. We're like, they're so unprofessional.
Those guys are unprofessional.
Yeah. They're like sharing their Snapchats. That's unprofessional.
Oh my gosh.
But she like I was bored, and it was the female supervisor was the only one there. The male supervisor wasn't there the other day.
Okay.
And so I was like just hanging out by them, and she was talking about like how she got sunburned, and they the reaction, she showed the girls a picture, And the girls were just like, oh my gosh, that is crazy how sunburned you are. That is like the worst sunburn. Like they literally made it seem like the worst sunburn. And I was
poor innocent young Hutton just getting himself into these situations, man.
I know. And they like it set itself up. I was like, how bad is the sunburn? And I don't exactly remember. It was a very quick part of my life. She turns her phone around and shows me the sunburn. And this lady is in this picture in front of a mirror in her bathroom, in her underwear. And little 14-year-old Hutton was like, ah!
And ran away because girls were icky.
And I didn't see if she had a sunburn in the photo even.
You're just like, I don't know where the sunburn is.
I just looked away really fast because I was just uncomfortable. I was like, oh man, I'm not here for this. I'm here.
Sure, makes me uncomfortable.
I just wanted to know how bad she was sunburned, and I got a little too much of the information.
Information.
Yeah.
My last story for us today, just to kind of wrap it all up as far as the crazy work stories goes. It was at the camp for the kids with special needs.
Is this the story that I know?
I don't know, it's either this one or the one that's Indecent Exposure. I'm not entirely sure which
I know the assault one, the punching one.
We might have to save that for a later epdod. So,
I might even know the other one that you were talking about. Now that I think you've told me.
So this particular camp is a camp for special needs, and it is also a Christian camp.
Yeah.
However, the people who are employed, the people who are employed at this camp, not so much.
Not particular. They did not. You say you were Christian when you got employed.
They're not some Christian babies, you know what I mean?
No.
So, at least some of them aren't. A group of them decided to create a fraternity known as
A fraternity in the camp for some reason.
They decided to call it Chi Beta Alpha. Which is also something that it's the camp's name and then appropriate. So, which is what we said as far as like any people flirting with people is not technically CBA appropriate. You know what I mean?
So Chi Beta is not the name of the camp though, right?
No, it is not.
Okay, good.
So, and we used to have like these meetings between some of the staff, like the boys staff, is sort of like a Bible study or like a book study through the week, and sort of just talk about, you know, us with God and that kind of thing. And every year they would have a big old bonfire.
Yeah.
that would, I don't know how to like, they would talk about like a big issue, and the issue usually was just about like pornography and why it's bad and sort of just like premarital sex. Like it's the talk, you know what I mean? Yeah. With a bunch of like college kids who already know this kind of thing.
So they talk, like it wasn't with like the campers. It was only with the leaders.
Leaders. The kids are in the cabins asleep. Okay. And this was like half a mile up the road. Like our people are, like we were split up into two groups, and our group, it was our night to do the bonfire, have s'mores, that kind of thing. It was assumed that every boy was a member of Chi Beta Alpha at this point. Oh. It was a bro fi bro fraternity.
And were you a member of this, Mike?
I was a member. In fact, I have a picture of us doing the work that we had to do as punishment, and we took it with our fearless leader.
Oh man,
what a great guy that guy is, let me tell you, because he was so nice about it. The head fraternity brothers decided that this was.
I got to know some context here.
Okay. Yeah, for sure. For sure.
How old are you in this? Around an age range. I got to know at least.
I'm 18, I want to say. 18 or 19.
And what was the spread of leaders of Chi Beta Alpha brothers?
To be a camp counselor, you had to be at least 18. So I was on the younger side of things. The other, like the older ones were, I think the oldest was.
But you were definitely 18, so it's like not like.
It's not like bad, but like it's bad.
You shouldn't have done it, but like I don't think any laws were technically broken except for like indecent exposure.
Yeah. So, we got to the site, we started the fire, and the group before us had already done this. So we were like, all right, it's our turns. So they started off with everybody. It was like a square block of like land. And it was like, there was hills underneath it.
So you were on a cliff, like a plateau with like steep drop-offs.
So it was, all right, everybody line up one by one. And we were like, okay. And it, one of the boys said, it is time for the group pee.
Oh gosh.
Everybody go. And then afterwards, you are to smack the butt cheek of the guy to your left. And we will begin the initiation. So the initiation happened to be at the fire. And the fire, you had to essentially, one by one, if you wanted to be initiated in the Chi Beta Alpha.
It was the most prestigious. So
prestigious fraternity this west of Harvard. You had to squat down in the fire, and you had to drop a log.
Oh, you—it was not the group P anymore.
No, that was just the intro.
Oh wow! Okay, wow, that was you. So you wait. Where did you squatted on the fire?
I did squat on the fire, but no.
Bro, was that hot? I feel like that would be really hot.
It burns.
Your tush.
It burns your tush a little bit. And one of our gentlemen, my fraternity name was, I believe, Big Boy was my
fraternity name. I can't handle this. This story is just progressing.
The last person to go was named Lincoln Locks. And he decided that he wanted to be hoisted over the fire by the two biggest guys.
Oh, man. And you were one of them? Were you one of them?
I was one of the guys holding him. My other friend held him. He has his arms out like chicken wing style.
Is this a genuine bond, like ginormous? Because those things are hot. Those, like, I mean, like, you can't get within, like, 20 feet of a humongous bonfire. You can't get
them. We were sweating a lot. It was a lot.
I don't want to hear that. You guys are arguably pantless, maybe hopefully wearing underwear, hoisting another man, definitely not wearing underwear.
And we were all shirtless at this point too.
Yeah. And you're sweating profusely with a man. It looks like you're going to sacrifice him over this bonfire.
They said, brothers, are you ready to hoist your brother over this fire? He begins to put his arms out like a chicken wing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we hoisted him up, one on each side. He curls his legs up. And, like, we hoist him over the fire. And he drops the logs.
Yeah.
We didn't think of anything of it. We did the...
So, wait. Okay, hold on. Sorry, I keep interrupting.
Okay, yeah, go for it.
Too good. So, oh gosh. So, like, was he the only one who did it right on top of the fire?
There were a couple who attempted, but it was like, oh my gosh, it's spreading.
You held him directly over the fire.
Yeah.
And he laid a log. He pinched a loaf right on top of the fire.
There was some sizzle.
And but everyone else was kind of like around the fire. Everyone else's admission to the Brotherhood was around the fire.
Yep. Everybody's okay. So if to put it in sort of sports terms, you guys know max like weightlifting in high school, like everyone tries to get hype for that person.
Yeah. you can't tell me that you hyped this man up.
They see the log start coming out, drops in the fire, and it's the most like primal like battle cry you could ever hear in your entire life. After this, we all had like this huge platter of like chicken wings.
Yeah.
And then we all sat around the fire and we talked about, you know, just male pressure and
dudely stuff, manly stuff, like
and then Christianity. We did the Lord's work, and then we talked about the Lord's work.
Was it only you? Was it only the leader? There wasn't, like, an older adult who, like, was facilitating this?
The older adult. So, there were two people who were our camp leaders.
Yeah.
And they said, don't do anything I wouldn't do. And we knew that they would do this. So, we did.
Okay.
As they're driving off in the golf cart.
So what you're basically saying in yourself is, hey, you didn't set a high bar there, champ.
No. So we didn't think of anything of it. We went to bed the next day, and then one of our people ratted us out, and the one who did not participate. And we prefaced it by saying, if you do not want to participate, then you can go, and that's okay. But they stuck around. And even
but you you can go, but you won't be a part of the Brotherhood, but you can go, it's fine.
So I was like, all right, it's fine. Campers leave and they call all the boys. Actually, so the next day
the campers left, so that was the end of like a camper wave waiting for the next one to arrive,
right? So okay. Like, but the thing is that the next day we still had like the campers. This was like mid of the camp week.
Okay.
We had like a bunch of like nurses like getting their med credits and stuff like that. And one of them was my friend, Kenny, if you're listening to this, I'm so sorry. But
the only name we're going to mention in this whole podcast.
We were at the basketball courts with our kids, and like he came up to us because we had a kid who was kind of just like he needed close monitoring and that kind of thing. And he goes, did you do it? Like no context. And I go, what are you talking about? And he was like, some of the boys had some nasty stuff go on last night. Were you a part of that?
Oh, so wait. So this was like a leader.
Was a nurse. This was one of the nurses who was like not a part of the organization at all.
And they were just like hired staff to make sure like people were safe.
And I go, I don't know what you're talking about. And he goes, you did do it, didn't you? And I was like, did you see that? I got a little snotty rocket.
Yeah, you got
it. He's like,
Mike's getting a little tense telling the story.
He's like, dude, nosebleed craziness. And I was like, I'm tensing up. I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. I don't even know how you know that. And he goes, you did do it, didn't you? And I was like, I'm not going to say anything. And he was like, oh my God, I can't believe that you did that. And I was like, sorry, dude. It's just what happens. Anyway, right in front of the campers, he yells it like, you did do it. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, let's relax here.
You're like, okay, let's tone it down. Not everyone needs to know.
Right. I was like, I have camper still. Like, and then the next like morning that we have like a break, we're all gathered around. Our COO comes to the camp. And, like, there's two camps. And our COO comes to the camp. Normally does, but needs to address something. And we talked about disciplinary actions. Those who were involved as camp counselors got docked pay of, like, $100.
Oh, man. The wow, that is... in
higher leadership who knew about it got docked $200.
Man, are they allowed to? I didn't even know you could dock pay. That's crazy.
Yep. And our.
Well, I mean, you did something dumb. That was genuinely a dumb thing to do. But like, Docking pay. That's a lot of punishment in like adult words.
And we would have these breaks set out. They're called 2/4s, which is basically like 24 hours where you can do anything you want.
Yeah.
And ours was spent cleaning up the camp because that of this sense. Action.
Was it like, did you have to clean up the area that you
got
accepted into the Brotherhood?
No. But apparently our supervisor went out with the COO. They looked over the campsite and saw them.
Oh, man. And was of like, course you oh, can God. Tell because human logs look human a lot logs. Different from other logs. Yep. As dog owners, we both know that they don't look like similar, really.
Look or smell, for that matter. So
yeah, that was... especially like on a fire, you nasty.
So, and then after that, my name wasn't called as one of the people who were responsible.
Oh, wow.
But I owned up to it, and I was like, no, I'm going down with them. If anybody goes down, I'm going
Those are my brothers.
Those are my brothers. We had the like
the hand signals.
Yeah, the hand signal, and I was like, I'm part of the Brotherhood. Sorry.
They're like doing little whistles and ear tugs and like they're like, you better, they're saying in your little Brotherhood language, you better own up to this, Mike.
Jeez, man. It was crazy times. And he just we talked to him afterward. Like after we were done cleaning, he was like, all right, meet back with you. And he's like, I gotta admit, like we have a rule book and we have extensive rules and like specific things that people cannot do at this camp because people do stupid things at this camp. And this is going to be one of those things.
Mike made the rule book. If you Google the rule book, Mike's picture is on that.
And he goes, I'm just going to say it. What you guys did, no, like, rational man, like I don't know what rational man in my mind would do this kind of thing.
They're like, why would you? They're like, what is the point of any of this?
And to give you guys perspective, this is a 28-year-old telling a group of like 26 through like 18 year olds.
Yeah,
this is not a good idea. But like, you guys did it regardless. So that's my story. There's a lot more stories.
I have one final little story, and then we should probably have some good like lessons to take away from this podcast because it got a little off kilter,
a little out of hand.
I think okay. So my last story, I was working at the city again, the city in which both of us live right now, the
city we love almost to a fault.
And it was the same job, it was the same T-ball thing. And
or Innocent Hut, man. Jeez.
And so they had like, you know, those like gator thing, the carts that you can like load stuff that like gators, like, so there's like a bed, it's like a miniature truck almost.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm not explaining that right. It's like a farm, it's almost like farm equipment. Like you can, it just has like a little bed that you can throw anything you need in and you transport it. We used it to transport back and forth. Like T-ball equipment, like
right.
And I was like, man, I always wanted to be dragged behind one of these things. Like I just always wanted, you know, to like a movie moment where you fall out of the back and you're just holding on to the tailgate with one arm and you're just And they were like, so do it. So from the T-ball area to the place, the storage where we held, like, not all of the stuff. All of the stuff was actually a little closer to the fields. There's a separate storage area. They were like, so do it. And so I did it. I held on, and they dragged me, like, and I was, like, face in the ground because I'm holding on with my one arm the tailgate of this gator.
Yeah.
And, and I was just being dragged along. And I'm sure it looked like a lot of bad working habits to literally anyone who was at that field at any moment. Cause it's not like it was just for T-ball. Like that was like, they played soccer on that field and they played everything. So like, there were more
football.
There were more people than just like the employees and me, but if they were there, they saw little 14-year-old Hutton, and I wasn't very little, but I was smaller, getting dragged by one hand behind a gator, and everyone else is riding in the seats.
Oh my gosh.
It's too good.
Yep. All right, Hut. Kind of wrap this up. I got a question for you, and it's a would you rather question.
Okay.
All right. Would you rather drink a glass, a full glass of expired chunky milk, or eat an entire bowl of moldy strawberries?
Oh man. I'm not gonna lie. I really think the moldy strawberries would be harder
to get through. Not that. You think moldy strawberries is harder to get through?
I think that I could handle choking down chunky milk.
Oh, absolutely not.
Like, mold is one of those things in my mind that I'm like, if this touches me, I'm gonna die instantly. Like, I know that's not true, but like, it scares me, and I'm sure that it tastes horrible, and like, you die from mold. I'm sure you can die from chunky milk, but it's probably less people die from chunky milk than mold.
Well, chunky milk is mold. Like, it goes bad.
Well, yeah. Like, it curdles.
Like, the stench of moldy, chunky milk by itself makes me...
Yeah. So we differ on this one. So you'd rather do the strawberries, and I'd rather do the chunky milk.
You can eat around the mold of the strawberry.
No.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Then I'd change my answer to strawberry. I thought you had to pop that whole bad boy in your mouth and eat as much of it as
even if I had to, like, do that, I would much rather do that.
Just mold, if I could eat like around a... if I could eat around the moldy strawberries, then heck yes I'm gonna take the strawberries. But if I have to eat the whole strawberry mold and everything,
chunky okay milk. Quick question though, what does mold taste like?
I don't know, because I'm so nothing scared. I've never wanted to expose myself to it.
We should. So this is a little podcast exclusive for you guys, but I think one of these days we're going to do like a taste testing competition, and whoever loses has to eat one moldy strawberry.
A whole, bro, isn't that dangerous? Like,
isn't no, there it's a- not dangerous.
I think it's kind of dangerous. I'm sure we're going to have someone listen to this, and they're going to be like, yeah, you guys are idiots. That's dangerous.
Well, if you guys have watched this far into it, we applaud you and we thank you.
And we have some closing thoughts.
We do. Absolutely. Don't poop on a fire.
Don't ask to see people's sunburns.
Yep.
Don't poop on fire. Don't join a fraternity. I don't know if I can endure. Like, I'm not a particularly like gravitated towards fraternities, but my brother really likes fraternities. So like, I'm sure there's some good parts, but I would rather say don't join a fraternity.
Don't get involved with group peeing sections either.
Like, always be prepared with a little metal baseball bat and pepper spray if there's someone who's cuckoo and you know they are.
Never work in a mental health hospital, ever. It's if not. You,
there's it's, one. If you work at Chick-fil-A, know that it's not going to be as glamorous as it looks from the outside.
Definitely not. So.
Oh, man, I had some good security stories from the retail electronics store that I work at.
All we need is five likes, Hut. All we need is five likes, and we'll do another episode of this for you guys.
A part two to crazy stories. Mike has some food service working. He Starbucks, Chick-fil-A. I have some food service. We have some more stories we could tell.
Absolutely. So, but this is going to wrap us up on the podcast today. Guys, thank you so much for, you know, just watching the second episode. And our friend, actually, her name is Alexa. She actually has something to say for you guys, is just some closing remarks. So we're going to listen to it real quick.
Thank you for watching the podcast with Mike and Hut. Click that like button, click that subscribe button, and keep it trill, boy.
Thank you guys for watching.
I knew you were gonna throw something in there at the end.
Absolutely. So thank you guys for watching. Yeah, we'll see you guys next week.
We'll see you next week. Yep.
Yeah.